This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Thank you, Aaron. And all my friends at the Slot Foundation and Mr. Harris, in particular, who I spoke to on the phone last week. Greetings from Stockholm, Venice of the North, Axis power of the Baltic, location of the European Song Contest in 1975 and in the year 2000. It's the middle of the night, the snow is falling, and I'm sitting in the middle in a hotel library in the Gamla Stan, the old city of Stockholm. The Gamla Stan, where Descartes met his demise. The great philosopher Descartes met his demise after giving early morning tutorials to the prodigious and cross-dressing Queen Christina of Sweden. In his wonderfully macabre 1827 essay on murder considered as one of the fine arts, Thomas de Quincey writes, and I quote, "For gentlemen, it is a fact that every philosopher of eminence for the past two centuries has either been murdered or at the least been very near it, inasmuch that if a man calls himself a philosopher and never had his life attempted, rest assured, there is nothing in him." And against Locke's philosophy in particular, I think it an unanswerable objection, if we needed any, that although he carried his throat about with him in this world for 72 years, no man ever condescended to cut it. And as these cases of philosophers are not much known, and are generally good and well composed in their circumstances, I shall here read an excursus on that subject, chiefly by way of showing my own learning. Evidently, unless I'm speaking to you now from beyond the grave, or I'm a zombie, which is not impossible, no one has ever succeeded in taking my life. But even worse, no one has ever even attempted to take it. This is proof, if proof were needed, that I'm far from being a philosopher of eminence, according to De Quincey's criterion. If, after this brief fireside chat, some person or persons might be inclined to murder me and thereby secure my posthumous philosophical glory, then I would like to thank them in advance, to vicariously shake them by the hand, to wrap them in a warm virtual hug. One lives in hope. In the meantime, I'd like to turn to De Quincey's infamous essay on murder considered as one of the fine arts. Its literary conceit, as old as Cervantes' Don Quixote, is that of the found manuscript, being the purportedly edited text of the Williams lecture on murder considered as one of the fine arts. The lecture was ostensibly read before the Society of Connoisseurs in Murder to honour the homicidal gifts of John Williams, who brutally murdered 7 people in the East End of London in 1811 and with whom De Quincey was unduly obsessed. Now, for the anonymous Williams lecturer, every topic, like a chamber pot, has two handles. This is especially true of murder. It might be treated morally as a rather bad thing, or aesthetically, as the Germans call it, as De Quincey says, that is in relation to good taste. A great gallery of murder is then exhibited by De Quincey, and pride of place is given to the eminent philosophers who have been murdered or who came close to being cudgelled to death, or having their throats slit, and being cudgelled to death and having one's throat slit were De Quincey's two preferred modes of dispatch. Descartes came within an inch of his life. He was almost murdered by a bunch of Friesland sailors who discussed his demise as if he were a puncheon of rum. Spinoza was murdered in his bed by an assailant only known through the initials LM. Hobbes was not murdered, although it is very true that a man deserved a cudgelling for writing Leviathan. Malebranche was murdered by none other than Bishop Berkeley, where the material cause of the clergyman's wrath was a disputation about the nature of idealism. Leibniz was not murdered, but thinking himself such an excellent philosopher, he died partly out of fear that he should be murdered and partly of vexation that he was not. Kant, Immanuel Kant, a man who could not possibly look more like a dummy when dead than he had done alive, narrowly escaped murder in the most bizarre of circumstances. As is well known, the wives of Königsberg used to set their clocks by the hour of Kant's daily constitutional walk. One day, for reasons quite unknown, a man decided to murder Kant and lay in wait for him on the side of the high road where the peripatetic philosopher was sure to pass. But then, for reasons also unknown, the killer preferred to murder a child who was playing in the road instead of the aged transcendental idealist. And in this way, the throat of the Moses of the German nation, as Hölderlin would have put it, was spared. Sadly, salacious and saucy as these murderous details are, almost everything that De Quincey says is completely false, an utter fiction and confection. But the topic is fascinating and worthy of some consideration. How did philosophers die? How did they meet their maker, if there is a maker to meet? How did they singularly or generally expire? And what lessons might their deaths teach us about the nature of philosophy and the nature of what philosophy is meant to teach, namely a readiness for death? Perhaps one day I'll write a book about it. But let me turn in conclusion to a few words about the theme of the exhibition, strictly death. Death is the last great taboo, it seems to me. Death is the one thing that we cannot talk about. It's somehow obscene to us. We are, if you like, anti-Victorians. The Victorians had a problem with sex, but very elaborate rituals connected with death. We seem to be exactly the opposite. We can talk about sex until we're blue in the face. We expect perfect orgasms night after night and all the rest. But we have a huge problem with death. We cannot stand to see death and stare it in the face, to see the skull beneath the skin, as Eliot said of Webster. We live in a culture which denies death. A culture which, in some of its more pernicious ideological variants, what I call Western Buddhism, would go so far as to claim that death is an illusion from which we can be redeemed through the right preparations, the right death rituals, the sort of thing that's described in enormous detail in the Tibetan Book of the Dead. By contrast, I claim that death is not an illusion, it is simply a reality. And it's only in relationship to that reality that our lives can be structured. Let me just say one more thing to mix this up a little bit. We discover a peculiar contradiction in relationship to death. Death is the limit, it's the end, it's that certainty in relationship to which life is structured. It is the denial of freedom in that regard. But, and here's the contradiction, Montaigne says in his fantastic essay, To Philosophize is to Learn How to Die, to be enslaved is to be enslaved to the fear of death. That what keeps us enslaved as human beings is that fear. It keeps us constantly on the gasp, as Montaigne says. Therefore, to lead a full human life, whatever that might begin to mean, a free human life, can only take on sense and significance in relationship to the end of death. This is the contradiction. Freedom, the freedom of human life, is only free in relationship to the necessity of mortality. Remove that end, remove that mortal limit, and life rapidly becomes meaningless. Think about the characters of the Struldbrugs that Swift describes in book 3 of Gulliver's Travels. These are characters that have immortal life on earth. They're marked with a red spot in the middle of their forehead, and they're found slouched against doors, unable to comprehend the language that's being spoken. Life has become meaningless. So life only takes on meaning in relationship to the reality of death, in relationship to that necessity. It's only in relationship to that necessity that our freedom gets traction and grip and meaning. So, to conclude, you are going to die. Ladies and gentlemen at the Slaught Foundation, you are going to die, each one of you. You may hide, madam, down there in the corner. You may skulk away, young sir, and think that you can flee death, but you can't. Death is coming to you. And this is what this exhibition tries to explore and celebrate. So, good evening from Stockholm. It's been a pleasure to be with you on this snowy night in the Gamlestaden, and I wish you health, happiness, and the gift of mortality at the right time. Good night.